Така, Томи Виктор сега на нашата линия. Hey, Mr. Victor, hello, how are you?
Hey, man, how you doing? What's going on?
Well, again, like a year after we got the last chance to talk with you, there's a brand new record of yours coming up. Last time you said that you don't know when the next one's going to be out, but obviously it's a fact. So the first question is, you got like covering 10 songs, but I think that you probably had a largest list.
Yeah, I mean, we had maybe about 16 songs that we were thinking about doing, and then we cut it down to 10.
So
I mean, it could have been more. I mean, it probably could have been 30, but... you know, with the help of Jason Christopher, the bass player, and he pretty much nailed what we were going to do. And I liked his concept for which songs should be selected. So, yeah, I mean, 10 is enough. It took a long time to do it. I mean, it was a lot of work to finish this thing. So, for very little money. So, yeah, 10, Basile, 10 is enough.
Are you planning to do like a part B, like songs from the Black Hole episode 2?
I wouldn't mind. I mean, it depends on the success of this record and seeing what happens. You know, it's today difficult because, you know, covers records are even less profitable because you don't sell that many records and, you know, you don't get any royalty rights from any of these songs. So, you know, I'd like to focus on another studio record. And then, you know, if we have time, you know, maybe if people respond well to this record, I wouldn't mind doing another one. I mean, for the amount of work put in, everything, it still was fun to do, regardless of the energy and time spent on it.
But still, I mean, what made you do this record? The official press release said that you finally thought of putting this on a record, like the stuff that had inspired you.
Yeah, I mean, that has something to do with it, is the origins of Prong and where they come from, and that needed to be described a little bit somehow. And then paying tribute to certain artists, guitar players, vocalists that influenced me. And I think that it's a matter of exposure to some kids today, or people aren't familiar with Husker Du and the Bad Brains that much. So that was important for people to know them and realize how much they influenced not just Prong, but many other bands throughout the last 20 years, really, you know. Minor Threat being one. We chose to do a Fugazi song. And yeah, I mean, Discharge was influential. Killing Joke, as if you're familiar with Prong, you'll know that it's probably our favorite band and biggest influence. And that needed to be tributed somehow. And yeah, I mean, it's like you said, plus a few more things as well. And it was challenging as well, too. I mean, it was to do all these vocals and try to adapt them somehow and, you know, make them a little bit different was also part of it, just the concept of doing it. I mean, initially I didn't know whether we had enough time to do it, but once I got in there and figured it out, I got energized by the project a lot.
Why million points? Can we say that you listening to some younger bands covering prong songs had given you the idea, hey, it doesn't start it with us, so let's go back to in the past and see what were the bands that inspired myself?
I hadn't thought of that. That's interesting. I mean, no one's ever really said that, and I didn't really think about that ever. I mean, there's this band Power Trip just did a version of Brainwaves, which was sort of Prong's tribute in a cover, in an original song on Prove You Wrong. It was sort of like a Bad Brain style song. So that's interesting. I mean, now you're just putting ideas in my head. So, but no, I never really think of that. I mean, in recent years, there hasn't been that many prong covers. I mean, Snap Your Fingers, Snap Your Dick was covered a bunch of times, but other than Brainwave, oh, actually, A Steady Decline was done by a band recently. And yeah, I mean, there's been some up in there, so I shouldn't really say that, but that has nothing to do with the reason of doing this record at all.
At least not consciously, but I'll probably need to see several played live stuff by even Bulgarian bands covering not just Snap Your Fingers, Snap Your Stuff, but you said that you're thinking of putting an ex studio album of yours, a proper one, not with cover versions. Tell us more details about it then.
I'm just starting to write songs for it based on my work with this guy Chris Collier, who worked on Rooting Lives. I'm pretty sure that he's going to be doing it with me again. So it's going to be in the vein of the last one, I think. It may be a little bit more raw, and you know, like after playing these cover songs so much and then having to learn how to sing and play them, I think some of those. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of it, because then I'm going to be really attached to the stuff that was, you know, influential on me, and then have to put it all together and maybe, like you were talking about subconscious stuff, maybe it'll emerge into the new material a little bit. So that's going to be interesting to see where I'm at with it. I mean, like, you know, like the last couple of records, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, I didn't really put a lot of thought into what direction it was going. We just sort of went in and did it, you know. It was and I think that's the best way to do it, rather than trying to devise a concept for making a record. And you know, you got to get some of the production techniques down, like, you know, the scheduling, how you're going to actually approach stuff. That seems to be more of a priority for me. And lyrics and writings, you know, the lyric part of it, then, you know, worried about, you know, breaking new ground or anything like that. Because, I mean, most stuff has been done. Prong did that, you know, years ago. So now it's just a matter of getting the best songs and the best sounding record that you could possibly make.
Well, but still, it's not all about sound, right? It's all about the general content and intensity of the record.
I agree. I totally agree with that. A lot of it had to do with, like, well, this collection of songs had a lot to do with when I started playing guitar, you know, when I really started picking up on, I think, like, it's really the beginning of my musical career is when, you know, these songs reflect upon that, really. I mean, as far as the childhood songs, and if that's what you're talking about, you know, like, I mean, that goes way back. I mean, from, I was asked a question recently, and it was said, what's your first musical memory? And I sort of do have that first musical memory. I remember I was in a car, and we were driving to the beach, and I heard the Doors, Light My Fire. I think that was like the first memory I had of anything. You know, that I'm sure there was other ones too, but that was the first thing I could remember. So, I mean, I go back into the 60s, obviously, so I've heard millions of things. But as far as, like, you know, like, this collection reflects in a really good way of where, you know, I come from vocally, and where I really started, you know, actually playing and doing things with a band, so as a guitar player.
It's been said a lot about you, Tommy Victor, as a guitarist, but basically they never talk about you as a singer. Is it offending in a way for you?
It's not offensive. I just, because I mean, I sort of lay, even if I don't get recognized that much as a guitar player, it's not offensive because, you know, I sort of got lucky and, like, you know, sort of fell into this whole thing. Or maybe it's not the block, I mean, or whatever, however you want to look at it. But, I mean, there's a lot more guitar players out there that spend a lot more time playing guitar, and there's, you know, these people that are taking vocal lessons all day long and are, you know, really trying to get involved, whether it be theater or what have you. So, you know, I'm just, that doesn't mean anything to me, really, because I know there's people out there that are a lot better and more technically proficient, really. So, you know, it's not a competition for me.
Basically, Jimi Hendrix, one of the greatest guitarists on earth, got his first guitar when he was 15. What was your first touch with the guitar then?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, I had a bass that I bought without even checking it out, and I just wanted to start playing. So we had a guitar laying around, but I never really, because I just wanted to get in a band. That was my whole thing. And then, ironically, and this is the way things work, I thought that I was doing a shortcut and, like, I'm just going to play bass because that'll be more quick. I'll get into a band faster. And every band that I was in as a bass player just failed miserably. I mean, like, to the point where, you know, it just, nothing was working out. So, I mean, I was focused on the bass guitar. And then, you know, even when Prong started, we weren't sure whether I was going to be the bass player or, you know, bass player, singer, or whatever. And you know, I said, away. I had fooled around in guitar. And then, you know, Mike Kirkland said, you just be the guitar player. So, that, I mean, that's really, and then when I was picked as the guitar player, that's when I was like, well, I better start getting my chops together. So within, you know, from like 86 to right when the band started until, you know, a couple of years, Beg to Differ was going on, you know, it was like I really was only playing guitar full time for maybe like a year or two, you know, well, before Prong started. So, you know, that's the story with that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a natural thing. I mean, you know, it's like, well, I mean, it's all some weird plan because, like I said, like, you know, I was trying desperately as a bass player to be in bands and nothing worked out. And as soon as, you know, I got in a band as a guitar player, then, you know, things took off. And I never really knew what I was doing that much. I sort of, you know, had to learn as I go. And that's why, you know, you were saying, well, people jam in the rehearsal studio, et cetera. I never really did that because I didn't really know any songs. Like, I never sat around as a kid and practiced guitar. And, like, I still to this day don't know how to play Stairway to Heaven and all that stuff, you know. It's, like, hard-pressed for me to play, like, you know, Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. I mean, I have a different background than most people. He came dancing across the wall.
Talking about your background, well, if it is the list that you've given us, there are not too many British bands on it.
Discharge, Killing
okay.
Joke,
yeah.
Sisters of Mercy. Those are essentially the ones, right? Is there anything else? Am I missing anything?
Yeah.
I mean, well, there could be.
It's a countless list, isn't it?
Huh?
It could be a countless list of bands anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, like, I went through that already. I mean, there's been a couple other interviews that I did where they were, you know, asking, well, who else could you have done? And then after, you know, going through it in my head again and picking the bands that we would have done, then I realized why we didn't do them. And this collection, there's really no reason behind any of them why we wouldn't do them. So it's really weird how that came about. I mean, it was almost it's very mysterious because, like, you know, every other band, I didn't want to do bands that were covered by a lot of other groups all the time, you know, too. Like, you know, you're like your Depeche Modes and you know, Joy Division. I mean, that, like, if you look at British bands, and the Stranglers we did already. So it was the process of elimination pulled out a lot. Like, Sisters was definitely a good pick, you know, because they're not covered that much. I mean, as far as I know, people haven't really tackled it. Mm-hmm. You know, Killing Joke, the only thing, you know, I know that Helmet did Requiem. That's why we kept away from the first record and we did the later Killing Joke cover, because no one's really done that neither. So Discharge, I don't remember anybody covering. So it was a matter of that, too. It was with what was exciting because no one else did it before. Yeah!
Were there any songs that you could have played and covered, but simply because you met the people that were the original guys behind playing them, that you originally didn't like because you had the bad luck meeting them and playing together with them?
I've met the guys in Killing Joke, and you know, initially, like, I'm not, you know, this has changed, but I mean, Jazz Coleman wasn't necessarily very nice to me when I met him, but that, because I liked him so much, it didn't really make a difference. It wasn't like, I hate those guys because Jazz wasn't nice to me. Mm. It didn't mean anything to me. And the same thing with Slayer, like, you know, like, I mean, I've met Kerry King dozen times and he's ignored me and, you know, like, his, not really, you know, turned his back on me, and, you know, it hasn't really been that nice, but it doesn't mean anything to me because I still think he's great, you know. So on the other hand, like, I know people have met me and I wasn't really nice to them or whatever, and they're like, I'll never listen to Pong again. So I don't really care, you know. It doesn't really make a difference that much.
So it's all about, you know, music, then.
It's like HR from the Bad Brains. I mean, he's another one. Like, you know, like, I've toured with them several times, and, you know, like, he wouldn't even remember me, you know. So, you know, people are crazy, you know. It's like it's a weird business.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's got a lot of issues, and, you know, I can't really, you know, reflect upon that as being reality, you know, of my self-worth, because some of these people aren't really, Tom, embracing me.
If it is a very personal question, please feel free not to answer, but try to be honest in any case. All these guys, including you, doing music, is it your main thing, like escaping from real world, or this is your real world, and sometimes you try to escape out of it, like having a parallel life outside of music?
I mean, I contemplate that all the time. I mean, that's a very enlightened question, because, I don't know a lot of times. I'm always searching for what that is. So, it's a matter of, you have to have some sort of faith in what is going on, like right now is your reality in a way. So for instance, in the prong story, you know, we disappeared for a while, and then, you know, I've tried other things and nothing else sort of works. And then you get presented with, you know, the opportunity to put out more records and to have a record contract. So that, because that's there, I'm the kind of person that would say, well, this is in front of me, and I might as well tackle this rather than, you know, than fighting it, or, you know, because I have fought it and it doesn't seem to work. So I have a different view of things than other people, where, you know, I trust destiny a little bit more. And basically the problem with prong too, on when you're talking about it, other life and everything, is because, you know, I am a guitar player, singer, a songwriter, producer, etc. So it takes up a lot more of my time than anybody else, and that includes anybody that else has been in the band, like, you know, like Ted and, you know, and Raven and guys from the past as well. So and that wasn't a duty that I asked for. It sort of like fell in my lap, you know. So I don't know if that really answers your question too much, but it's like it's a very involved situation for me, and it does take away from opportunities to do a lot of other things. I mean, I do, you know, I'm a hired gun. Like I said, I played with Ministry for a long time, and, you know, that's just a paycheck. And same thing with Danzig. So, if I was just doing that, I would probably find something else to do. So, but, between... playing sideman and then doing pronger is a lot of work, really. You know, I do have other activities like playing video games and, you know, hiking, etc. But it's not anything as time consuming as what, you know, has to be done for the band, really.
Mm-hmm.
No sound is heard from unit 2, when there was once so much to do. Was once a green mansion, but now it's a wasteland. Our days of reckless fun are through.
When you put the bottom line so far, because I'm sure that there are many great albums out of you coming, when do you think you're a better songwriter? When you're sober and clean, or when you had opened your subconscious?
It's just going to be different, you know. I just think you get things more work done, and your ability to make decisions is when you're clear headed, and it's a lot easier then. I mean, where, you know, you're not concerned with small things that are bothering you that much, so. You can overlook a lot more, and that's good, because I think a lot of artists who are, you know, like, you know, you talk about people that are, you know, under the influence of whatever, they seek to get, you know, and I've known this from watching Al Jorgensen, where he'll just go crazy about one little thing, and, you know, it's something that'll be bothering him, and it'll take 2 weeks to finish that thing, you know, mm-hmm. where... You know, You know, I'm much more in like to get it done, get it over with mode these days, and I think that's natural. I mean, like, it's sort of like a painter. You know, you can't go back and redo things. Like, you put it on canvas and it's done.
So,
you
know,
you sort of have to have that. It's like that. It should be like that with music a lot of ways, but because we have this modern technology, you know, where you could go in and tweak things and change things and keep moving things around and rearranging all the time, that, you know, I think that takes away from the initial impact of a song or, you know, what you're doing a lot of ways. So I keep away from that. I'm really concerned with, you know, with overusing the technology now is a big issue. That's what I said earlier on. It's like, you know, I'm really concerned with like the production of the records because, I know these people that sit around for I'm like, well, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm still writing. I'm like, you've been doing this for 2 years now. I mean, what is going on? You know, just get this thing done already. You know, why keep fooling around with stuff? I was involved with this other project recently that, you know, I'm not getting paid for. It's called Primitive Race, and it's like an industrial project, and it's like, you know, I'm just singing on it. I'm just doing singing. But it's like these guys with their computers, it's like, you know, I go in and do a vocal and everything seemed to be fine. And then when I get it back, I'm like, hey, wait a minute. What happened? What did you change this? They changed that. It's like, it was fine before. It's like, well, we thought, you know, on the next stage that we do this and that. I'm like, no, you know, it's like something that could be done in like a month is now taking a year to do. So, you know what I mean? So this is what you got to deal with. Please leave your number and a message at the tone. Or you could just go on and leave me alone. But I don't want to know if you are lonely. I don't want to know if you are less than lonely. I don't want to know if you are lonely.
Last question is, do you think that the ultimate guitar riff has been already invented, or you still keep on searching?
Well, the degent bands, they'll tell you differently. I mean, they're still searching for that, you know, there's a couple of groups that are pushing the envelope, I really believe, and so in a couple, like, you know, when Meshuggah came out, like, we didn't think that was, there was a potential for that to happen, so...
Frederick Todendahl was the name of the guitarist there.
Yeah, and so Meshuggah blew everybody away, and now, like, there's a whole generation of bands that are trying to, you know, topple that or better that, but, you know, essentially to me, and it's all based on complexity more. So I think that, you know, what I want to do is revert to just ultimate simplicity in the riffs and as a statement against, you know, what's going on out there with heavy metal guitar players that are just going crazy. You know, it's just like, you know, first it was 7 strings, now they're doing 8-string guitars, and now everything's, the tunings are all over the place. So, I mean, to a certain audience and certain people, they, you know, they think that they're doing something different, and that's fine. And there's a younger generation that, you know, if they hear Smoke on the Water, they're like, this is garbage. So, you know, it depends, it's all relative on where you're coming from. You know, to me, like, you know, like Sunshine of Your Love and you know, Smoke on the Water and Black Dog, those are the classics, you know, like, to a generation in the 90s, where people would say, you know, like, Beg to Differ and you know, Blackened by Metallica or, you know, the Ultimate Risk. So it's all relative, really. But, I don't think there's a you know, an end to the book being written. It's just what people like, you know. So there you have it. It is? He said, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. All right, so...
But yeah, I mean, Iommi is the greatest. I mean, as far as riffs, I always go back to him or Ritchie Blackmore or Page or Clapton.
Well, man, good luck with the record.
Thanks, man. Yeah. We'll keep in touch, buddy. Thank you, bud.
For sure. Thanks, man. Have a great evening, man. And it was a pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, brother. Bye.